Yeah. Okay. So in this parsha, one of the things that it says is that they were trying to go into Eretz Yisrael. Rashi says that this parsha already takes us, you know, in the last couple of parshas, particularly in Shlach, we learned about the Gzera that they had to be in the Midbar for 40 years. And then already in Chukas, we fast forward 38 years. And they're already at the end. That's how Rashi learns it over here. And we're already holding, Rashi says, Kol Aida, he brings some Chazal, Aida Hashleim, Shekhar Mesu, Mesa Midbar, Ve'elu Parsha Mechaim. So Be'etzem, they're holding by going into Eretz Yisrael. So what happens over here is that they wanted to go in through by way of Edom. So they said to them, you know, let us pass through. And Edom said, no way, not over my dead body, so to speak. And they didn't let them come through. And then it says that that Aaron was nifter. In this parsha, Miriam, both Miriam and Aaron are nifter. And then it says that when Aaron was nifter, so the Anabi Hakav dispersed for a little bit. Chazal saying the Amalekim in the south of Eretz Yisrael, they came to fight against the Yidden. Fine. And then the next parsha says, "Vayisu maharahar derachim." So from this way, as Eretz Edom, so they had to go all the way around Edom, right? If you imagine, like, if Eretz Yisrael, let's say, is over here, so Edom is like, I think, over here, I seem to remember. So they probably wanted to come up through here, and then they had to go all the way around until they got up to Amon and Moav, which is at the end of the parsha. They get to Sichon and Og, which is Amon and Moav, right? And then they're going to go through Amon and Moav. So it says, "Vatitzar nefesh on badarich." So the nefesh of the people became short on the way. Basically means they lost patience. They basically lost it. By Dabar Ha'om Be'elokim of Moshe, Lo Me'elu Yisim of Mitzrayim, Lo Me'elu Midbar. Why did you bring us up from Mitzrayim to die in the desert? Came lechem me'mayim. There's no bread. There's no water. Right? They lost the Be'er Shel Miriam when Miriam was nifter, and Moshe Rabbeinu had to hit the rock. Nafshinu kotza b'lechem akloikel. Right? We're sick of this lechem kloikel. Someone has told me that kloikel is Moshe kal kalo. It's very light. So I just want to stop over here on this lesson. Fine. So it says that the Hashem sent the snakes to bite them and kill them, and then he told Moshe to make the nechasha nechayshes. And then when they looked at it, so they were meshavet bimam shemeshlaim, and they did tshuva and they said, "We're sorry." Fine. I just want to stop for a moment on this lesson. Rashi says like this: "B'terach haderech, the tircha of the traveling got to them. Shuvu shalem, it was really difficult for them." They said, "We were so close to getting into Eretz Yisrael, but now we're having to retreat." This happened to the previous generation, and they had to wait for 38 years until today. So therefore, they pushed it; they couldn't take it. Then Rashi says like this: "The whole davar kasha al adam, everything which is difficult for a person, anything which is hard for a person." So that is the way in Lashon HaKodesh you express when someone finds something difficult where he feels like he can't bear it. That's called Kitzur Nefesh. All of a sudden, some type of a tircha fell on him. And his mind was not wide. Literally, Rashi says to be makabalit. He has no room in his heart for that pain to reside. Something which is a burden for a person, you say goydel that it's big because it's too big, it's too heavy for him. The klal of the pirush, says Rashi, is koloshim kitzur nefesh b'davar loshim she'ein yochol esayvla. He can't bear it. She'ein adas seivalta. His das is not able to bear it. So now the million dollar question is: all right, I'm sure you're all familiar with, you know, we all have things like this that happen to us in life. That sometimes we have situations where we just feel like it's too much. We're just overwhelmed. And the question is: what determines whether someone has enough? You know, his mind is open enough to take it, or there's enough room in his heart to take it, or not. Like, what determines it? So let's just use, like, a very mundane example, and to try to get at this. Imagine a person has to go from Beit Shemesh to Yerushalayim. So he checks the traffic report, and he finds out that, fine. So the traffic report tells him it's going to take, instead of 45 minutes, 2 hours. Okay, I'm going to chayav. He needs to go. So he'll manage. Right? He's not gonna, you know, when he's driving the car, you know, like you're driving there, and then you have another guy, he can be driving right next to this guy. This guy is driving along, Seder. You know, he has to all of a sudden in the middle of the highway, he's stopping mamish a full stop. Seder, no. And this guy's next to him honking on their horns and swerving, trying to get into this lane, to that line, mamish, they're plotting. In English there's an expression called road rage. You ever heard of that before? Road rage? You guys drive?
Yeah.
You drive?
Yeah.
You know what road rage is. You can't take it, right? And you're very angry. Maybe you don't drive enough to experience it.
Oh, I drive a lot.
Okay, so fine. So road rage. So what's the difference? You have two guys on the road, right? So Avada, there's personality differences. There's no question. Some people are just intense people by their personality, but we're not talking about that nekuda. We're not talking about the nekuda where it's like a person matikzar nefesh. Like when you feel like you're overwhelmed, you literally become short of breath. Someone who's like road rage, so he's all worked up, right? But he's not necessarily overwhelmed. When a person's overwhelmed, like he can't take it. Like he just feels like he needs to escape, right? So you can have a guy who's like sitting there in the traffic. He's like, oh man, what's with this traffic? You have another person whose mom is going crazy. So what's the difference? Like, when it comes to the road rage versus the guy who's relaxed, it could be there's a personality difference. You know, one guy has a more easygoing personality, a softer personality, just by nature, and another guy has a more, you know, worked up personality. But what about the person who's, you know, feeling overwhelmed? You know, being overwhelmed is not really be'etzem a personality trait in of itself. I mean, a person, I don't think a person can be born in a way that he's noted to be overwhelmed. You can be trained to be overwhelmed. In other words, let's say a person grows up, you know, and all his life his parents and his teachers are always like, you know, you're never good enough, you know, you're never doing things good enough, and always demanding. So he could get this sense of like, just like, life is just too much for him. So, but let's talk it not like that. Not a person who has like some type of, you know, emotional imbalance as a result of, you know, difficult life. It's not like he's overwhelmed. So what's the difference? So I think a very big difference has to do with expectations. It's not what you expect. The guy who called up the traffic report, he was expecting that it's going to take him 2 hours to get to Yerushalayim. So fine. So when it actually winds up taking him 2 hours, no big deal. That's what I was expecting. I'm not overwhelmed. There's room in my mind and in my heart for it because I knew it was coming. I was expecting it. But if a guy, let's say, he has an appointment, or he wants to get to the Kaisel, or he wants to get to here, he wants to get to there, and he was banking on the fact that it only takes 45 minutes to get from Beit Shemesh to Yerushalayim, so then when all of a sudden his expectations are not met, right? Don't open the window. His expectations are not met. So then he feels overwhelmed because he does not have room in his mind and in his heart to take it because he was not expecting it. He was expecting that it was just going to be a breeze. He was expecting that it was just going to go glatt. It was going to go smooth. I saw that Rav Fishel Schechter, he's a Magid Shir in Torah V'Das in Brooklyn, and he gives like Shirim on the Parsha, Shirim on Halacha. He said that one time he was on the highways in New York, and there was, you know, like the big signs they have, and here and there, in Israel also they have, sometimes you have see signs like this, that it says delays ahead. And he says the truth is that like almost every time you go on this highway, the sign always says, it's like a, you know, a digital sign. It can change, right, depending on what the traffic, but it cannot always says delays ahead. Like, Sky, what's the point? And he said, but he got his iris from it. And he said, because life is full of delays, right? We were expecting, you know, let's say that we were going to go on such and such fuel and it didn't work out, or there was, you know, we were expecting to be able to leave at 10 o'clock in the morning and we only managed to leave at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Or let's say, I don't know if you guys are holding in shidduchim at all, you know, let's say a person was mevar a certain shidduch, right, and spent a long time on it, right, and he was, and everything really looked like it was going to go, and then all of a sudden the last thing, you know, like this, something comes up that becomes like a big monkey wrench in the whole plan, which either makes an iku for like a month or something like that, or just blows the whole thing. The lady, he said, halavai, someone would just put a sign up in front of us that said, here's the sign of life, delays ahead. It would make life a lot easier because life has a lot of delays. There's a lot of bumps in the road of life, right? And that's the way life is meant to be. And if we would just, you know, try to realize that that's part of life and it's normal, and to expect those delays and the bumps in the road, so it would be much more easier to deal with. I heard a shiur once from Shlomo Brevda on tape that he said that the Maseilas Yesharim says that everything in life is nisayon. If a guy's rich, so it's a nisayon. Is he going to be gavdik? Is he going to be a miser? Right? He's not going to give. Maybe he's not going to give his stocker properly. And if a guy's poor, right? So he has a nisayon for him. Maybe he's going to steal this. So he brings a pasuk from Shlomo Melech. Forgot where Mishlei. Maybe he says penny varish v'gonafti, right? Lest I become poor, because then maybe I'll wind up stealing. Unless I become rich, because then maybe I'll be mekachish, I'll be kaifer Hashem, and I'll say, oh, kaich vaitziadi, who needs Hashem? So, we all know this line from Nisal Sham. We all know that everything lies as we need Sayyim. But he says, he gave such a good mashal. And maybe you guys are not, you grew up in here and it's so almost done, right? So you're probably not so familiar with it, but, you know, like, there's something called an obstacle course. You've ever heard of such a thing before? So what's an obstacle course? You know, you have these people that are competing, right? And they have to get through the obstacle course. Now, what is it? A guy has to get from point A to point B. But to get there, the whole concept is that there's going to be a lot of things in the way that make it really hard for him. Like, let's say, all of a sudden, he has to swim through a pool, right? And while he's swimming, all of a sudden, there's going to be huge waves, right? Someone's going to, you know, you've ever been to these pools that they create artificial waves. Huge waves crashing, right? And he has to make it through. And then the next step is that he's got to swing on a rope, from one platform to the next. And as he's swinging, there's like these fake birds swooping in to try to dive bomb him, right? And then he's got to walk across this beam. Right, and as he's walking, these huge balls are being thrown at him. So imagine such a guy when he's doing the obstacle course. So you think he's saying to himself, what is this? What's going on here? This stinks. I can't stand this. What's going on? What's happening? No, if I cared. He's happy. It's good. Why? What's the difference? Right? Imagine if someone's like, you're walking down the street and all of a sudden two pigeons dive bomb your head. Right? Whoa! Right? And then like you take a 10 meters forward and like two kids on their bikes are zooming by and you just manage to jump out of the way. Right? Oh my goodness, what is going on over here? And then like you want to cross the street. Honk, honk! Right? The car light just as you're about to go. Right? You're going to go nuts. Right? You're going to be like, Rebbeinu Shlomo, what's going on over here today? So what's the difference? The difference is that one guy knows that he's meant to be going through an obstacle course. So fakert, he likes it. It's a challenge, right? It's a, what do you call it in Hebrew? Etgar. It's an etgar, right? It's a challenge. You have to overcome it. Atat tzarich litmodeg la'shvitz la'arot et hakochot shelcha. Right? You show your koiches. This is how you show what you're really made of, what stuff you have inside. Whereas when you're not on, when you don't think that you're on an obstacle course, so then you look at it as hafra'ot, right? In other words, do we look at it as an etgar or a hafra'a? Is it a challenge to overcome, to bring out your potential, or is it, this is bothering me? It's bothering my menucha. It's bothering my nochiyut, right? It's interrupting with my life. Right? Get out of my way. So I personally related to this mashal a lot. Because the Rebbe said that, really, we're not really so trained from the time we're little kids. Imagine from the time we're little kids, part of our training that our parents and our teachers were getting into us that life is an obstacle course. We're here to bring out our kaiches, to show what we're made of. And yeah, fakert, and the guy in the obstacle course, it's not only that he's not bothered by it, he likes it. He enjoys the obstacle course. Because since he knows that this is what it's meant to be, he knows that it's meant to be a difficult challenge to overcome, so that he can bring out his kaiches and show his kaiches and really reach his total potential, so he enjoys it. So if we would look at life, that life is meant to be an obstacle course. We're put here in this world to go through an obstacle course. Right? So then it would make, not only would it make life easier, it would make it more enjoyable. We would enjoy life more. Right? If we understand that all the difficulties that Hashem sends our way, whether it's literally, you know, pigeons die by us, and sometimes literally, yes, I use that example, because one time I was walking in the street, and all of a sudden, it wasn't a pigeon, but you know those smaller birds that fly really fast? I'm telling you, I had to duck. The thing was just pushed, like just came straight at me, right? And one time I was driving, and one of those birds flew right into my gagon, and I heard it go boom, right? And I thought that it, you know, bumped off, but then a few days later, my friend who was getting a ride with me, he said, you know, you have a dead bird in your gagon. So, whether it's that, or whether it's, you know, things that are, you know, a little bit more subtle, you know, like, let's say, your chavrusa said something that bothered you. Or your rabbi said something that did not exactly rub you the right way. Right? Or you were in shul and you didn't get the aliyah that you wanted. Usually that example applies usually to older people. It's usually older people that get bothered by those kinds of things. Or it's the shidduch that didn't work out that you thought was going to work out. Or whatever it might be. Or chavrusa, you wanted to buy a car, you wanted to use a car, you wanted to borrow a car, and it didn't work out. All these things, it's not only that if we understand that life is meant to be an obstacle course that makes it easier to deal with, it becomes enjoyable. Because then we understand that the whole point of all these things is so that we can bring out our kaiches and reach our potential. You know, and the funny thing is that we tend to think that, like, what's like the spitz matzim of life? Imagine a guy's in the Bahamas. You know what the Bahamas is? Yeah.
You've heard of the Bahamas, like Hawaii, whatever. You know, like these like vacation resort islands. You know, man and a guy, rich guy in the Bahamas, he's taking a vacation in Hawaii. It's a beautiful, you know, right around sunset time by the beach, and he's in a hammock with his lemonade and a nice book or whatever, or maybe he's, you know, got his little, his device, whatever he's watching, and that spitz. Ah, comfort at its best. The emphasis is, though, that it's baduk menusa, it's not menusa, but it's baduk, that so many of these people, that when they're on these trips, these vacations, Rav Yaakov Weinberg once said, I think Rav Noah Weinberg also would say like this, he would say, you ask a guy, you know, why do you work? Why do you work? The guy will tell you, why do I work? I have to live. I have to put bread on the table so I can live. Right? So, what do you need to live for? Why do I have to work so hard? Right? And I'll say, oh, listen, you know, I have to save up. I have to be able to take a vacation at some point and enjoy life. And what do you need a vacation for? Oh, you think I could just work all the time without any relaxation? So you work in order to be able to have a vacation, in order to be able to have a work. It's like, you know, Galgal HaChayzer, Catch 22. Like, where exactly is the purpose in this guy's life? So many of these guys, I'm telling you, I've seen it with my own eyes. While they're on their vacations, befrat nowadays because of the digital devices and it makes it so easy to do work from far, their mamish constant, their minds keep going back to the work, and not only their minds, their hands and their feet keep going back to the work, and they get back to the work. They get back to the work. What? And not only, and by the time they're finished, they're so happy to go back to the work. I once heard, I think it was a Mordechai Gifter, it was Rav Shimon Telz. He said that he once went to a, I think someone that he knew from when he was younger. The guy became a huge gevir, mamish. Went to go raise money for the yeshiva. So he went to his house, and his house was like crazy, like luxury beyond belief. Mamish, bigger than you can imagine. Every single amenity that you could possibly want or dream of. Indoor swimming pool, outdoor swimming pool, exercise room, you know, auxiliary living rooms, dining room, mamish, everything. There was just one thing. The guy wasn't there. His wife and kids told him he never comes home from the office. So Rav Gifter, I'm pretty sure the mice was with Rav Gifter. He somehow managed to chat the guy in his office for like 2 minutes. And he said to him, he said, let's just call him Chaim. Rav Chaim, he said, you work so hard to build your fortune, to have all these things, and you don't enjoy it at all. What are you doing with yourself? And he said, Rav Mordechai, he said, das ist für die Weib und die Kinder. That's for my wife and kids. Aber Hatzlacha in what you're doing, darf liegen in Geschäft zu haben Hatzlacha. You have to be totally munach in what you're doing to have Hatzlacha. So Rav Gifter, he didn't care about the money that at that point, he was so overcome. He said a whole schmooze at the yeshiva. The Harris, you hear? Darf liegen in Geschäft zu haben Hatzlacha. You have to be munach in it to have Hatzlacha. What's the nekuda? This guy pashit, he couldn't stop himself, Kimar. What's the idea? Because it says, Adam la'amo yulad. Man is born to work. HaKadosh Baruch Hu built into the genes, into the DNA, the emotional, psychological DNA of human beings, that they have to work. People that don't work are usually because they become adish and meduka. The depressed, complacent. That's people who have problems. But people that are healthy, they mamish, they always want to be active. Right? We're not like cows. Cows are very happy. You give them a nice patch of grass somewhere in a shady spot on a cool spring day, and they're very happy. But people are not like that. They always have to be, they're always working, always moving, right? Some people in a more intense way, some people in a less intense way, but always doing, right? Adam l'amul yulad. People are created to work. So we have to understand that it's like a, what's the word? It's an ashlaya. Did I use the right word? Yeah. This, what? Yeah, it's like this concept that people think, you know, we have a tendency to think that like, nochiyut, if I could just get a little more nochiyut, a little more convenience, a little bit more ease in life, then life would be better. Like Rav Fischer Schechter said that a friend of his was very wealthy. He said, Rav Fischer Schechter himself always points out that he has no money. And he says, a wealthy friend of his said to him, you know, I envy you. He said, you get to imagine that if one day you'll win the lottery and you'll have a lot of money, all your problems will disappear. He said, me, I don't even get to have that illusion. I didn't even get to have that fantasy. I can't even dream about it because I have the money and I know that it doesn't solve any problems. Adarabba makes more problems. So the nakuda is that we have a tendency to think that the more comfortable we are, the more convenience we have, the more luxuries we're able to get, then life will be better. But the emes is that it's kum fakir. The more we're active, the more we're working, the more we're accomplishing, the more successful we feel, and the happier we are. And if we understand that we're in this world to work, and it's in our DNA, we can't do anything about it. This is the way we are, right? The only way we'll be happy is if we work. So if we understand that the things that come our way that make it difficult, you know, when we set ourselves on a path, and all of a sudden there's an obstacle on the course, there's a bump in the road, there's a delay ahead. To understand that how gufa that is part and parcel of what life is all about and how we bring out our kaychus, then not only do we make it easier for ourselves, it becomes enjoyable. Rabbi Chil Yaakovzin said that when he was a young bachar, I think he said in Yeshiva Ketana, so maybe he was in Rav Shlomo Zalman's yeshiva, so he got used to the fact that, you know, everybody always tries to ask big rabbanim questions, irrespective of whether you really have a good question or not. You have to ask, you know. It's like I saw a mice with Rav Yashiv. But people used to, besides Rav Yashiv's set hour that he had during the day for Kabbalat Kahal, he also had that when he was walking back and forth from his house or to the shul or whatever, people would hop him on the way and ask questions. One time, everybody had already gone, and he was walking, there was only one person left, and at a certain point, Rav Yashiv said to him, no, Freyab is the paltashchis. He says, ask something, it's paltashchis not to ask. A lot of times you see a big rabbi, you're like, no, I have to ask something, it's paltashchis if I don't ask, right? So the kids are, so all of a sudden Rav Yaakovson piped up, he's a little bacher. He said, Yeshi Sheila. The problem is that he didn't have one. So everybody, like, he said it loudly, so everybody was like, no, waiting for him to ask questions. So he's like, quickly thinking, and then he remembers that he had a certain question that he once had in Cheder, that the answer that he got was a smack across the face. What was his question? So he asked Rav Shlomo Zalman this question. He said, it says in Pirkei Avos, right, Rav HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mezakos Yisrael, Lefichach, Hirv Alehem Teiru Mitzvahis, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give us a schuss, so he gave us a lot of Teiru and a lot of mitzvahs. So Rav Yaakovson asked, Mamish Betvimus, he said, what do you mean it's mezakos? The more mitzvahs we have, makes life more difficult, right? More isurim, more chiyuvim, more obligations, and more opportunities for people to be nichshol and to have machshelot. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said to him, he said, tell me something, do you put your shoes on in the morning? He said, yeah, I put my shoes on in the morning. He said, you know the halacha about how to put your shoes on? And he said, yeah, I know. First you put on the right one, then you put on the left one, then you tie the left one, then you tie the right one.
Depends if you're right or left.
No, I actually don't think so. Yeah, are you sure about that? Okay, fine.
Left.
Be'ikaron, yeah? So then he said to him, and he said, Rav Shlomo Zalman asked this question, the question that I'm about to say that he asked. He asked it in such a yididuti way that he would not have been mitvayesh to say no if the answer was no. He said, V'ata mekayem et ha'alacha hazot? And he said that Rav Shlomo Zalman asked it in such a sweet way that even if he wouldn't have kept it, he would have felt comfortable saying, no, I don't. But it happened to me that he did. So he said, Ken, min kayvet ala ha'cha hazot. He said, Nachon, shebein kol v'ko, ata chayav to put on your shoes in the morning. Either way, you're going to put your shoes on in the morning, right? Have you ever heard of someone jumping into both shoes in one shot? Everybody first puts on one shoe, and then they put on the other shoe. Right? And he said, have you ever heard of someone who's so aloof that he could tie both shoes at the same time? He said, no. So everybody, anyway, you always put on one shoe first and the other shoe afterwards. You always tie one shoe first and the other one afterwards. So the Baruch Hashem says here, anyway you're going to be putting on one before the other and tying one before the other. So let me give you a way to do it that becomes a mitzvah. All you have to do is be margul yourself to it, get used to doing it that way, and then after, how many times does it take till you're rogul? Certainly not more than a month. Once you do it for a month, you're rugged to it, then for the rest of your life, without even realizing it, the way Rav Yaakovson said it, is that you're pulling behind you all the kevet of mitzvahs, and you're not even aware of it, and you're going to get up to Shemayim Achamei Ve'esrim, right? And you're going to see that, whoa, a whole kevet of mitzvahs, I have a whole train of mitzvahs. And he said, there's so many things like that. And he said, that's what, ben kovako, either way you're going to be doing this. Either way you're going to be putting on one shoe before the other shoe and tying one before the other one. So the Baruch Hu says, I'll give you it in a way that it's a mitzvah. Lefichach hirbel and tayru mitzvahs, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to be mezakos. And then from there he mentioned a word from the Chafetz Chaim, that there was a guy who had, like he was a big gvir and he had a lot of money, it's stock on gemachim and this and all different types of things. And so people said, and it was becoming like, people were coming to him so often that it was becoming like a lot. It was becoming like a burden. Like, and someone said to him, "Listen, no, your mom is, it's becoming a burden for you, right? And not only that, but every hour that you spend for Kabbalat Kahal, for giving tzedakah, gemachim, whatever it is, right? Think that you could be working during that time. Think about how much more money you could be making, giving meister and chaimish and more gemachim than this. So hire a gabbai, hire a mazgir, or some secretary, a personal attendant secretary, who will deal with all the people, right? And they'll take care of the you know, the chalukah, so to speak. And you'll work and have more money than given. You also won't have to suffer." The guy made a lot of sense. And there are a lot of people that do that, by the way. And they're not doing anything wrong, necessarily. They're not doing anything wrong. But for some reason, this guy, it is something that didn't strike him right about it. So he went to the Chafetz Chaim to ask. And the Chafetz Chaim, he said that he wasn't able to catch the Chafetz Chaim. He wasn't able to catch him. And then he wound up having to stay in Rabin for Shabbos. And then by Shalashudis, Chafetz Chaim was saying over Chmeis, they were singing Mizmor LeDavid. And then afterwards, Chafetz Chaim, after they sang Mizmor LeDavid, he said over, it's interesting. David HaMelech says, "Ach toiv v'chesed yirdefuni kol yimei chayai." He said, toiv and chesed, goodness and kindness. David HaMelech wants goodness and kindness. Other sense is the Chafetz Chaim. The lashon of roidef, redifa. Like usually the lashon of roidef is like when one guy is going to kill another guy, or someone's being roidef after someone. It has a very negative implication to it. Is that the way you talk about toiv and chesed, goodness and kindness? Hashem, I want goodness and kindness to be roidef. You say ach toiv v'chesed ezke kol yimei chayai, akabel kol yimei chayai. Right? Well, you're defuni. So the Chafetz Chaim, and this guy was there listening to the Shalosh Shuvos Drasha, and the Chafetz Chaim said that bein kol v'kol, either way, every person has a certain amount of sevel that he has to deal with in his lifetime. Everybody has a certain amount of things that are going to happen to him, that are going to be right with him, that are going to bother him, that are going to make things difficult for him. So David HaMelech was saying, "Ribono shel Olam, please help me that I should be nirdof by the tzedakah and the chesed that I do in my life. That the toiv and the chesed that I do for other people, that should be my chelek of the redifa. That I should be nirdof by things that I could say, oh, Baruch Hashem, ani nirdof vehem nirdofim. Ani nirdof binyonei toiv v'chesed vehem nirdofim binyonei shtus v'havolim." And the guy heard this vart and he chapped immediately what he needed to do. Because it's a tremendous chus that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us. If we have to deal with things that go on in our lives, everybody has a certain amount of challenges, things that are going to challenge them, you know, and push them and see how they're going to deal with it. So if the Ribbono Shel Olam gives it to us in a way that it's stuck of a chesed, that we're near the because of stuck of a chesed, then it's a tremendous, tremendous chus. It's a tremendous chesed from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Also, later in the parsha, it talks about the maiso that happened by Nachle Arnon. So it says that as the Rashi brings the Chazals, that as they were coming into Eretz Yisrael, so the Kanaim were like hiding out in the mountains. Right? You guys know this message? They were hiding out in the mountains, and then the mountains came together and squashed them, right? And it says, Sefer Melchomai Hashem, because these were Melchomai of Hashem that the Kali Sol didn't even know, and then the bear lifted all up the blood and the bones and everything that they could see. So I saw an interesting avart brought down from some cipher that by the Chazal also darshan over here. Sefer Melchamas Hashem is vahiv besufa, right? Chazal darshan that there's the Melchamta Shel Torah, right? That even a father and his son, a Talmud and his Rebbe, become like enemies sometimes when they're learning Torah. Like you see sometimes, mamish, people get really fakocht. I saw a maaseh with the Chazon Ish was known to be one of the most calm, deliberate, you know, in control type of a person. Rav Aaron Cutler was known as the exact opposite in terms of learning. He was mamish fire mamish that Rav Aaron Cutler was. And the only time people ever saw the Chazon Ish get worked up is when Rav Aaron Cutler came to visit and they started handling and learning, and they were so, apparently the way the mice was set over is that the people from the Bnei Abayis saw that these two Gedolei Yisrael were getting so worked up that they were worried that they were mamish going to start hitting each other. That's Melchamta Shel Torah. Right, Nasu Ivan Bishar, over es Vahiv Besufa. Vahiv Chazal Darshan Lashan Ahava, but it always ends off with Ahava. Always Ahava is at the end. So I saw an interesting word that it says from the Chasam Sofer that it says, Tamidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. Right? Tamidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. that how they mar b'shalom, because there's a gzeira that there always has to be a certain amount of milchama in, let's say, a certain medina in the world, whatever. So when talmidei chachamim engage in milchamta shel Torah, so that is the kiyum of that gzeira. The gzeira that there had to be a certain amount of milchama takes away from milchama, real milchama, right? And then he wanted to tie that al pidach samsayfer. That's the pshat. It's void besufa. That the milchemes Hashem, the milchamta shel Torah, since ben kovakol there had to be milchama. Either way, there has to be milchama. So when the milchama is niskayim, while he did the milchamta shel Torah, tamidi chachamim, so then it's void besufa. It causes ava in the end, and it causes more ava in the world. I saw a maisa, Rav Goldschmidt. He has a book called Dear Daughter for Women and Dear Son for Men about shalom bayis. And he writes a maisa that he once was visiting in a certain town, and he was davening in a certain shul. And after davening, he was shocked. There was a guy sitting like right at the opening of the entrance to the main, you know, to the ulam of the shul. And he was bawling. He was just crying his eyes out. He couldn't believe it. And he was a very, like, a very levavi type of a person, very warm, caring person. And he said, start talking to the guy, what's the matter? Turns out that the guy had gone through the war, right? He had gone through the Holocaust, and the Pasha had emotional scars. The Pasha never went away. And he asked the other people in the shul, he said, like, you know what? Why does everybody just walk by this guy and ignore him? And they told him, he said, you don't understand. This guy does this every single day. Every day, what are we supposed to do? Every single day the guy does this. And Rav Goldschmidt said that he was really bothered by this. And he wanted to understand this. He said, well, what are these people, like, cruel people? And he said, no, they're not cruel people. He said, just the Vardy is that there's only a certain amount that people are able, I'm coming back now to the idea of Kitzur Nefesh, that there's only a certain amount that someone is able to be soiled, someone is able to bear. Right? If you, there's someone who needs emotional support, right? So a guy comes to talk to you, he needs to talk something out with you, he needs a listening ear. Doesn't necessarily need your advice, he just, needs to hash it out with you. So, most of us are able to do that once in a while, but imagine you have someone who comes to you like every day or every other day, needs to talk about the same thing, and he needs to talk about it at length. So then you just, it's called system overload. I was reading about this new computer system on the news, that the software costs $50,000, and the computer, you read about this? And the computer to run it is $20,000, and it's able to compute things that it's like billions and trillions of data points. That a normal computer, they said, it would churn the data for like 3 days, and then after 3 days, it would show the blue blinking screen of death. Because it was just system overload. The system just is not built to deal with that much data. It just can't. It can't deal with that much stimulation and information. So, this computer that can, it's cost a fortune. So, we also are limited. We're human beings. We're limited. And if there's too much, stimulation, if there's too much, it's just system overload. It just shuts off. So, he said, it's not the shot that these people were cruel. Chas v'shalom. It's just that they went on system overload. They just couldn't. The system shut down Lu'umas, this guy, because what can we do? It's just too much. So, he used that to explain to women, because women have a tendency to be very emotionally needy relative to men, right? They always need to be reassured, right? They always need to hear again and again how you like them and you're happy with their company and what they did is good and this. Women are very, and well, a guy when I was a chassan, so I spoke to a few of my friends that I considered them to be bnei aliyah for shtickle advice. They had been married before me, shtickle advice in a marriage. So one of them said to me that his wife once explained to him that men work like this. Listen, assess, fix. Right? If there's some problem, there's some issue, so you listen to the problem, you assess it in your mind, you analyze it, and you fix it. You give a solution, you fix it. Men are all about fixing the problem, going weiter. And she said, women are not like that at all. They're all about share your problem, care, express the fact that you care, and encourage. In other words, what he told me she was telling him, is that many, if not most times, when women discuss issues, it's not because they want your practical advice or help or fixing. They just want you to share their burden, share their emotional difficulties, so they don't feel like they're alone. And that's what they want. So he was telling women that they have to be careful not to overdo it with their husbands, because they can cause system overload, in which case their husbands will not be able to take it, right? I remember that a guy that I knew in the mirror. So he said, you know, wives are nags. And I was like, what? I'm sorry, could you run that by me again? And after I read this, so I understood what he meant a little bit more, right? You know, that because men, because the way their system works is very different from the way women's systems work, so they can kind of get this feeling that their wives are nagging them, but they're really not nagging them. What they're trying to do is they're trying to establish, you know, an emotional sharing of the nice of oil. That's basically what women want. Women want you to be nice of oil, right? But he was saying, you know, that people could tend to get overwhelmed. So I wanted to end off this part, you know, besides everything else that we said about, you know, expecting. So first of all, obviously, to expect it, to understand that in marriage, right? I mean, listen, you guys are not so far off from the parsha. How old are you?
I'm 21 in like a month.
Okay, so you're not so far off, you're also not so far off. You know, so it's not a bad idea to, you know, someone once told me that, I think it was my Rosh Hashiva in America, or Gedalia Einemar, that someone once told him that halavai that they would do chasen shmuzim many years before the chasen would be a chasen, right? It's not enough just to have chasen shmuzim, you know, like a guy gets engaged, you know, and anywhere between 6 weeks to, let's say, 3 months, he's going to be married, and then you prepare him all. No, you have to start thinking about these things in advance. Not to think about them too much, but every now and then to hear, you know, things that you need to know when the time comes. It's like the Gemara in Bracha says that al zaisis fal kol chasid le'eis mitzoy, that there's things you have to daven for, not wait till the time comes when you need it, but to daven to Hashem that Hashem, when I will in the future need it, please make it matzui to me. And one of them, the Gemara says, is a shidduch, right? So l'chayra al derech zeh, we could say that also le'eis mitzoy of having the proper kelim. So one thing for sure is to know. Is to understand, to know to expect the delays and the bumps in the road in marriage. That marriage is not just, you know, like this, like, you know, easy breezy going thing. No, if I can't, it's a challenge. It's an etgar, right? It's mamish. It's a matzav of, you know, things that always coming at you that you didn't expect, and to see how you're going to deal with it, to show your potential. But also, I just wanted to mention a couple points that I think are practical nekudas that might sound funny at first, but the truth is that I don't think they're really so funny, right? One is from Rabbi Yitzchak Silver. He said sometimes women get into these discussions, like especially, let's say there's like a bit of friction. You know, like she said something and then you said something and then a little fight, you know, whatever, there's a bit of friction. So sometimes these conversations can go on, he said, and it could just get to the point where it's just too much. So he said, a great idea is to be mastikin. Now, you can't just say, I don't want to talk to you, but you say, oh, it's time for Marav. I'll just jump out to Marav. I'm coming right back. Right? So that way, like, you give it a breather. Like, you push it, make a half stick. Your head will have time to let off steam. Her, you know, her emotions will hopefully, you know, even themselves out a little bit, balance themselves a little bit. Right? So that's one practical piece of advice. That if you see that things are like, you know, becoming like a little bit too overwhelming, so find a way out, not in a way that's going to upset her. Oh, it's Mark! And of course she's going to say, oh, yeah, fine, go to Mark, right? But you say, don't worry, I'll be right back. And then you go. And then you talk to go. Right? And another one, this is going to sound even funnier, but Rabbi Victor Miller said it. He said that it's very important that a person, wherever he lives, should be nearby to a yeshiva, based medrash. And he said, besides the obvious ruchniyistic benefit that you get, there's another benefit. He said, sometimes when you get upset at your wife, you'll have somewhere to go. When you get angry at your wife and you don't want to be around her, so you left somewhere to go. Now, at first, it sounds like, what? Yeah. Rav Vigler also once said, he had a way of saying things, a certain Kutzker type of way of saying things. Someone once came to Rav Vigler Miller and he said, you know, I think I'm having communication issues with my wife. So after speaking to the guy for a few minutes, he said, I think the issue is that there's too much communication. Meaning, the Gemara Takas, the Mishnah Takas says, "Afidu biishlei anu." There definitely is a musug of knowing. You know, you have to use chachma, knowing when to say, "Okay, this." You know, I've got to find a way to take a breather for a minute. You know, like we've the discussion has gone on too long. So he said, you know, if you're upset, you have a place to go, right? Imagine if a guy has no place to go. So where's he going to go? What is he going to go to the billiard hall, to the pool hall? It's not exactly the best place to be, right? You know, I get to go to base medrash. You know, some people go to base. Sometimes you see people coming to the base medrash. They don't do anything. They just sit, chapashmooze, maybe listen with half an ear to some chavrusa shop which is talking about something interesting, or half an ear to a shir, which is good. You ever seen guys like this go? You ever seen this before? It's usually in places where there's more balabatim. You know, you guys are not. You guys are here when the Yungle Light are here, but in places like, you know, on Shabbos or whatever, you know, like, sometimes you just see a guy walking to the base medrash. It's a place to be. And again, what are these concepts? The concept is you have to be arum b'yira. In other words, sometimes you have to think out of the box in terms of how to deal with the challenges in life. Right? So I look at these examples of Rav Yitzchak Silver and Rav Avigdor Miller, Rav Yitzchak Silver is still alive, he's a dying in Yerushalayim, Rav Avigdor Miller was nifted. Right? That you know, you have to be arum b'yira. Sometimes you have to think out of the box. Like, so we generally have like this sense of like, okay, I've got to see this through to the end. Sometimes the way to deal with the challenge is to be mishtamet, move away, right? You know, sometimes you feel like the challenge is okay. The bike rider's coming at me. I'm gonna grab him and I'm gonna flip him over my head, right? Okay, that's one way of dealing with the challenge. But another way is just move out of the way, let him pass, right? And Fakhrettgar, in the obstacle course, these people are trained. They're not, the guy's not catching the balls and throwing it back, right? He's not catching the wave and throwing it. He's trained to roll with the punches. You ever heard of that sprach before, to roll with the punch? You know, I took karate for many years. I actually got to the point where I was a black belt. You're also a black belt, no?
Yeah.
I took karate for many years. So one of the things that my instructor, I've been out of it for who knows how many years. One of the things that my instructor taught me, one time I was just standing there and he just like out of nowhere just threw a punch at me. Not so hard, but just threw a punch right here. Right? So like I started tipping over. Cause like net, like there's this automatic knee-jerk reaction to just like stiffen up, right? No, I'm not letting you move in it. And he showed me, no, that's not the way you react to a punch. You have to roll with a punch. When a guy punches you, you let your shoulder roll. You know that, right? You let your shoulder roll in. Why? Because then you don't feel the impact, right? That's a chachma. In other words, the chachma of the obstacle course is not to try to, you know, be like a chayma bitsura and go up against it. So much of the chachma of the obstacle course is to know how to be mishtamit from the obstacles, how to work around them, right? So that's also part of this. Arum b'yira. Sometimes in achanah, sometimes you have to deal with something else, and you have to have the chachma to know when to go in for the offensive, like a straight punch, right? And when to know how to just stave it off and go to the side, right? When some of you learn this, that the best way to deal with a fight is to avoid it. That's the best way to deal with a fight. The best way to do it is to avoid it. Because once you're in the fight, right, it's very difficult. Doesn't mean that you can't. Sometimes you have no, there's no choice to avoid it. Listen, sometimes things come up, you have to deal with them. You know, if a kid is having a horrible time in school, you can't be mishtamet. You can't bury your head in the sand and pretend nothing's happening. Right? Or if there's marital issues, you can't just bury your head in the sand and pretend that nothing's happening. But sometimes the chachma, the arum b'yira tells you, just chakim at achiyav rezam. Just move out of the way a little bit, and then you'll see that it's just going to pass. Like Rav David Kaplan says in his book, he says, you know, sometimes you'll be sitting like Friday night, right, and it's so calm in the house. You know, the little kids are playing, and you're reading a sefer, and your wife is reading a book. All of a sudden, one of your younger teenagers will say, "Why in the world is Shabbos so long?" And he said, like, you naturally feel like, oh my gosh, what do I do? What do I do? Right? He said, you don't always have to fix everything. He said, experience shows that with this type of thing, when a teenager, like a young teenager, says something like that, it's just a fleeting thought. If you'll just leave it and be like, right? That's interesting. Right? Or just sometimes just ignore it. Sometimes if you ignore it, they'll be nifga. You can't ignore it. But sometimes they'll just say like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, you know, Shabbos is here. Yeah, you're right. Shabbos is long. Right? And just like, don't deal with it. It's just going to pass. Right? So sometimes we have to know when to tackle, like deal with things head on. And sometimes we know just to let ourselves kind of like just go with the flow, roll with the punch, and just kind of like move out of the way. Right? And if we do this and we allow ourselves to expect the delays, expect the bumps in the road, and use our chachma to how to deal with them, when to deal with it head on, and when to just move out of the way, then life not only becomes easier, it becomes so much more enjoyable. Okay.